we are on air for Panther Racing's NASCAR race review of Martinsville. And just to give you an idea of what our night is going to look like, we are going to start off with a few updates from the Arca Menards series, the East and the West, and then we're going to do a review of the race that took place this weekend at Irwindale Speedway with the SRL Southwest Touring Series. At the top of the hour, we'll get into a few updates from the NASCAR Truck Series. They did not race this weekend, but we will give you a few updates just to keep everybody up to pace. At about 8:15, we'll get into, I'm sorry, it'll be 9:15, we'll get into the Xfinity Series race that took place at Martinsville. And at 9:30, our guest is Dylan Zampa. He is part of the Pro Late Model Series, and he's also an Alan Kulwicki Driver Development Finalist. You remember a couple of weeks ago we had another driver who was a finalist. Well, tonight it's Dylan's turn to talk about his experience. At 8:45, we'll get into the NASCAR Cup Series at Martinsville, and then at 10 o'clock, at the top of the hour, that's our NASCAR Hot Topic Sound Off, and it sounds like we'll have a full crew here for that at 10 o'clock, and I'm sure we have plenty to talk about from Martinsville. Sal Figala is joining us now as co-host. So, Sal, welcome to the show.
Oh, good evening, Sharon. Thank you.
Okay. Well, I've gone through the run-through of the evening here, and now I just kind of want to get into the Arca Menards series. They're on a long break, as we all know. Those of you that listen to us regularly, this is a lot of repeated information, but for those that are new to our show, we still give the information so that everybody can have their calendars marked and ready to go. The next race for the Arca Menards series is the General Tire 200, and that will be at Talladega Super Speedway, April the 24th. The race starts somewhere around 1 p.m. Eastern Time, and will be televised on Fox 1. After that, the next race would be the Arca Menards Series East. The Music City 200 will take place on May the 8th at 9 p.m. Eastern Time at the Nashville Fairgrounds Speedway. And that's a really cool reward that they get for racing at Nashville Fairgrounds. I believe it's a jukebox. So one of the nicer rewards for winning. Sal?
Yeah, it is. Yes, it is very. I'm sorry,
you
Sharon.
That's okay.
Can't find the word. Couldn't find the word for it. I got kind of tongue twisted there.
That's okay. The Super Jeep Showdown is part of the Arca Menards series. There are 20 races for the Arca Menards series. 10 of those races are a separate championship, and it's called the Super Jeep Showdown. And the first race for the Super Jeep Showdown takes place on May the 22nd at 8 p.m. Eastern Time. The Urs Potato Chip 200 will be televised on NAV TV. So for those folks that have that, they'll be able to watch that live. And then finally, for the Arca Menards Series West, their next race is June 5th at, 5 p.m. Eastern Time, the General Tire 200. And both that and the East race at the Music City 200 at Nashville Fairgrounds are available as part of the NBC Gold Track Pass package. So if you have that, you'll be able to watch the live streaming of both of those events. So that gets you up to date with what's coming up next for all of the Arca Menards series. And I got to tell you, Sal, Arca, if you go to arcaracing.com, they have a lot of great articles up there to keep fans up to date with what's going on with a lot of the drivers in these series as well.
Yeah, they do a good job of, you know, like you said, you know, trying to keep everybody up to date. especially, you know, when they have such a long band before, you know, in between races, you know, to start the schedule out.
Yeah, so this is a great chance to get to know who some of the drivers are. There's a couple of 10 questions segments here. One is with Brett Holmes, so you can get to know him a little bit better. But there's another one for 16-year-old Sammy Smith, another Joe Gibbs Racing driver. There's 10 questions to get to know him as well. There's some updates on Taylor Gray. Some of you may or may not know that he was involved in a streetcar accident, a one-car accident. He had a broken lumbar as well as an additional surgery for ankle and leg injuries. But he's expected to make a full recovery, so you can kind of be up to date with what's happening with Taylor Gray there as well. So a lot of really great articles there.
Yeah, there is. You just got to go in there, check it out, and, take some time, to see what they, see what they have, coming up, race season.
Exactly. This is a great way for everybody to get to know who these drivers are so that you recognize who they are when they're out there on the track. They've got something here on Todd Gibbs, on Andy Jakowiak. Gracie Trotter has an article. Tony Breidinger has a feature. Driver Howie DeSavino III also has a feature. He's getting ready to make a NASCAR Camping World Truck Series debut. And then there's all kinds of videos that you can watch as well, and some of the latest photos that are available. So I really encourage everybody to really check that out. As far as the standings, we'll start with the ARCA Menards series. We've got Corey Heim leading that series by just 2 points over Todd Gibbs. Drew Dollars behind by 9 points. Kyle Sieg, the brother of Ryan Sieg, is 12 points back, and Thad Moffitt is 26 points back. That rounds out the top five in that series.
Yeah, we got a tight points battle going on over there.
We do. In the East, they only have two races in the book so far, but Sammy Smith has the lead. Taylor Gray, we just spoke of him. He had that one car accident and is expected to make a full recovery. He's right now in second place. He's 8 points back. Then there's Max Gutierrez at 9 points back. Mason Diaz, minus 10, and Joey East is 15 points back. So another tight points battle there among the top five drivers in that series.
Yeah, it is. Only two races in, a lot's going to happen before the end of the season. Hopefully by the time we get to the halfway break, too.
Exactly. Now, the ARCA Menards Series West had their season opener out at Phoenix Raceway a few weeks ago. And so they have one race in the books. And Ty Gibbs actually leads the series points there right now. I don't know. We'll probably see a bit of a shakeup here because a lot of these are East drivers that are in the top five. But when you get down to six, we hit who we know is an ARCA West regular. So let me start with Ty Gibbs at the top of the list. 6 points behind him is Corey Heim. 7 points behind is Thad Moffitt. Kyle Sieg, again, at 10 points back. And Derek Kraus, who is actually racing full-time in the truck series, is 10 points back. So that rounds out the top five. But then Jesse Love from the West is in sixth place. So we'll see that shake up as the season progresses for the ARCA Menards Series West.
Oh yeah, by the race after, by the time we get past Sonoma in a couple months, that you won't see Ty, Corey, Thad, Kyle, or them up top of the, or even Derek at that. It'll probably be Jesse, and you'll start seeing like Jesse, Todd Sousa, Trevor Huddleston, Cole
Moore, right.
who's running the full season here. Dean Thompson is running the full season. Jake Drew is running the full season. With actually Jake and Trevor Huddleston are running for Sunrise Ford this year, the full season.
Oh, cool. Okay. Now, this past weekend, Sal, there was a race at Owendale Speedway with the Spears Southwest Touring Series. And you probably didn't get a chance to go there to see this, but were you able to watch it on Spears Racing TV?
Actually, I was there. I just didn't post
nothing. Oh, you were there.
Yeah, I didn't post anything. Even some of my buddies that were taking selfies, I said, don't put nothing on Facebook. I'm still on disability, but yeah, I went up there. I shot the three races, the Spears Southwest Modified Tour, Spears Southwest Pro Late, and of course the Spears Southwest Tour race. So if you go to the Spears Southwest Tour Facebook page, the three victory lane photos those are all mine, but I told Kevin and Brian don't put any, I didn't put watermarks on the photos. I said, don't put any kind of indication that I was there. I had to tell my buddies, don't even, usually I post that I'm there, you know, and I post updates during the race, and I couldn't put anything. So, but yeah, I was there at the race.
Oh my.
Nobody was expecting it. I got called after, hey, we thought we'd seen you at the track, but you just stopped to say hi. I go, nope. I go, I was undercover. But
okay.
It was a very good,
so,
very, very good race.
So I'm looking for the race results here.
Okay,
I found the standings. So who won the race?
Yeah. Okay, so Derek Dorn did win the race. He started seventh. They had he actually qualified seventh. Didn't have a really good qualifying effort, but then because the Spears, they the top 10 drivers, they have a redraw, and so Derek and the top seven drivers have a redraw. I think it is the top 10. Either way, Derek started from the seventh spot, worked his way up. Him and Buddy Shepard, actually Buddy Shepard led most of the race, the number 22, which is a driver out of Bakersfield, California. And then about midway through, then Derek kind of came in and took the lead. And from there it was Derek Dorn all the way to the end. So the way they finished, it was Derek Dorn finished first. Jacob Gomes, who started 10th and lost a rear end on Friday night. So after the last practice, they spent the evening putting a new rear end in the car to get it ready for Saturday. So he went out and he practiced on Saturday, qualified Saturday, they ended up finishing second in the race. And then Cole Raz, who we had on the show last week for the Kawiki, not last week, but 2 weeks ago, for the talked about his participation in the Kawiki Driver Mental Development Program, finished third. Christian McGee, who we had on after he won the Chili Willy 150 weeks ago. Yeah, finished fourth. And then Kel Kanky was fifth. So that kind of rounded out your top five. And then from there, sixth was Preston Peltier, who we've had on the show before. Seventh was Brandon Farrington, who we've had on the show before. We've had Buddy Shepard. He finished eighth. Ninth was Carlos Vieira, who we've had on the show a couple times. And also then rounding out the top ten was Blaine Rocha. Round out the top ten.
Oh, very
the
cool.
The series point standings won't be updated until tomorrow, until Tuesday, and then Brian will post them. He'll update everything on either tomorrow night late or Wednesday. But there will be a shakeup as far as the points go.
It says the 2021 Touring Series standings after Irwindale 2. Wouldn't that be?
Well, it does.
Be updated? Yeah. So
let
I can
me,
go over
let
that.
Let me check. Yeah, go ahead and go over while I go to the page.
Okay, I've got Preston Peltier at the top of the list. He's got 340 points, followed by Buddy Shepard at 330 points. Jacob Gomes is at 310. Then Kale Kanky at 280 points, and Jace Hansen at 268 points. So that rounds out the top five.
Yeah, those
moving
aren't the points.
To the next five. Huh?
Sharon, that's not updated.
That's not
because,
updated. Okay, so because there weren't there,
yeah.
too.
Oh, yeah, no, but then if you go at the top, it'll have four, and in the 410 spot, they haven't put the points because Jace Hansen didn't run this week. And actually, Jace Hansen would have dropped from that fifth spot probably all the way down below, I would say, all the way down to probably 22nd with Casey Roderick is probably where he would end up. Keith Spanger ran this week too. Yeah, so I went to the page, and on the 410 spot, they haven't put the points because Derek is going to make a huge jump. Probably Derek will probably jump in the third, maybe possibly knocking Jacob Gomez out with the win. So yeah, there's going to be a big shakeup in the points, especially Christian McGee will drop too. Actually, Christian will move up, and then Derek will jump on top of Christian
right.
And Preston will be. It's going to be a close battle between Preston and actually Derek. It'll be a close battle between Buddy and Derek when they shake out the point standings by tomorrow or Wednesday. But the win for Derek was kind of unique because this week he ran the 5150 sponsorship logo. That's him and Carlos Vieira are our teammates. And this was also Derek's 51st win in the Spears Southwest Tour. So it was kind of neat that he got his 51st win and had the 5150 on his hood. So we did the victory name picture. We took the picture of the hood, and then Carlos went and updated his Facebook page.
Very cool. Very cool. So Irwindale is a really popular track out there on the West Coast. And so this is usually a pretty big event. How was the attendance? Did they have attendance?
You know, yeah, we finally had fans in the stands. So we had limited fans in the stands, which was still good. So I would say it looked like about 1,500 or 2,000 fans in the stands. I wouldn't quote me on as far as the actual attendance, but because we're at limited capacity, but it was neat. To see the fans back. It was neat to see the fans back, and the fans were excited. As well as everybody. And then of course they had it. They showed the race on Spears TV, but it was neat to finally see fans back, and hopefully we'll see how the rest of it goes, for the rest of the season. But Tim kept making mention. Wear your mask, because two Irwindale police officers were patrolling the parking lot. They keep coming in, and they were checking to see if everybody's wearing their mask, so they can go back to the city and tell the city, hey, the fans were wearing their, and everybody in attendance was wearing, had their masks on. But even during, in between races, Tim was, kept telling people, if you're not drinking or eating, please put your mask on. And Tim even went as far as to, they went and walked the stands, and they picked a couple fans that were wearing the mask, and they went and gave them a ride along at the driving school on Sunday, so that was a little added extra, incentive, but he made it clear to the fans, as long as we wear the mask, we can keep having fans. But once you guys break that rule, then we're going to have to, not allow the fans back and, go and shut it down and go back to racing, the way we were before the fans. But all in all, it was a really good event.
Well, hopefully everybody.
And you really got to get out there and get out and see one of these races, Sharon. One of these Spears races.
Well,
I'll tell you, it's one of the top. Well, it is, in our opinion, and from what we've seen and from what I've seen, it is the top touring super late model series right now that's going on in the nation, because you have you still have the Blizzard series that they run at Five Flags, but they only run like five races a season, you know. And basically, what they run it for, it's a tune-up for the Snowball Derby. But you know, our schedule, you know, is a lot bigger, and you know, if you talk to Brian, you know, I would send Brian a message and tell him, hey, dude, you know what? Hook me up, you know, give me a flight and a hotel.
Oh, there you go. Well, I'll tell you what, the next race is actually at Stockton Speedway, and that's going to be on Saturday, May the 1st. Are you going to be able to go to that one, Sal?
Yeah, I'm hoping that I'm hoping that my surgeon says that I can go back to work on the 3rd. So this way I can drive out on the 30th, you know, and go the 30th or the 1st, and then drive back home on the 2nd, and then go back to work on the 3rd. So that's what I'm hoping for. If you can't make it,
if you're like me, I live in Illinois, so getting out there to these races is a little difficult. One thing you can do is go to the srlsouthwesttour.com website. They have Spears Racing TV, and you can actually watch the races live streaming. Right, Sal?
Yes. Yes, you can. And I watched the Winter Showdown from my living room because I couldn't make it because I just got out of hospital. And the coverage is top-notch. I mean, Jeffrey Best and Tommy Mason, who've had low-budget TV, you can also follow low-budget TV on Facebook. And they start out when they were kids with just these little cameras just having fun. They call it low-budget TV because that's what it was. And just having fun out at the track filming. And now they not only do they do the Spears, they also do Irwindale, but then they also, tracks from around the country call them to film, to do their races. So, I mean, they went from just two kids that were having fun at the track because, you know, their parents were at the track, you know, making this a big event. So, they do a heck of a job with any race that they cover. But yeah, you can go to the Spears website and see it's called Spears TV, I think it is. And they do a really good job. You can watch all the current race that same day. Then on the website, they have all the past races. You can go back and watch it. Very, very good racing. We had 30 cars on the half mile this weekend. So our car counts really good. So, lots of racing going on all the way around the track. And, you know, when you get, 30 cars, 35 cars out there, on a half mile, the series is doing something right.
Exactly. Well, one worthy note here is that Derek had Racing for Autism on the car, but he also had 5150, and it was his 51st victory this week at Irwindale as well.
Yeah, I'll tell you, these guys put on a heck of a show. All of them,
they're
all
true,
the drivers.
They work hard
to get out there.
We know Derek's real busy, but we're hoping at some point we can get him back on the show and kind of chat with him about the season. He's part of Byron and Carol Campbell's race team and has been a long-time driver with them. So he always does a good job representing them.
Yeah, I know he kind of has trouble on Mondays, but maybe we'll have to work with him on a Thursday. Or maybe he has a soft spot for Sharon, so maybe Sharon can go ahead and send him an invite.
Oh, my. Well, he's a really nice guy. I met him out at Iowa Speedway a few years ago, so that was a lot of fun. Him and Ryan was at Irwindale Speedway, and I had a lot of fun getting to know them out there. So that was a lot of fun when they were racing for the K&N Pro Series West. So really enjoyed meeting them. Okay, so with that, Sal, let's go ahead and give a few updates here. I know we're a little ahead of schedule, but that's okay. You know, the Truck Series did not race this weekend. Their next race is going to be at Richmond Raceway. And right now there's 40 teams that are listed for that race. Some notes, the number three of Howie DeSavino III will be in the number three. The number 32 will be Sam Mayer. The number 33, Keith McKee. The number 34 is a TBA right now. But you know, you heard us mention Howie DeSavino. They've got a feature on him over at ARCA Racing, so you definitely want to check that out. But that race will take place Saturday, April the 17th at 1:30 p.m. Eastern Time. The green flag is expected at about 1:42 p.m., and it will be televised on FS1 with radio coverage on MRN and SiriusXM NASCAR Radio. They'll be racing a distance of 250 laps over 187.5 miles for the day. The last race was the Pinty's Dirt Truck race, and that kind of shook points up a little bit, Sal, because Martin Truex Jr. won that race. So right now, we've got John Hunter Nemechek at the top of that list, but Ben Rhodes is the driver with two wins sitting in second.
Yeah, you know, it's, you know, and I always wonder, you know, why they, I mean, if they're going to run at Richmond, why don't they just run at Martinsville too? You know, and just, you know, make it a, you know, bring all three, you know, bring all three, you know, all three series, you know, but, you know, I guess,
it would be
all,
fun.
You know, because they want to run them. Yeah, they want to run them at night. You know, that's part of the reason. I mean, that's the only thing I could think of would be one of the main reasons, you know, that they do this. But, but like you said, the driver's points did get shaken up after the Bristol dirt race.
Yeah, and I think there's going to be some more jockeying for position that's going on here. 6 points separate Ben Rhodes and John Hunter Nemechek, and then it's Sheldon Creed at 21 points back in third place, Matt Crafton in fourth place at 40 points back, and Stuart Friesen in fifth place at 53 points back. But just 2 points behind him is Austin Hill at 54 points back. Then it's Zane Smith, Grant Enfinger, Todd Gilliland, and Austin Wayne Self right now are the top 10 drivers, and it is 10 drivers this year that are in the playoffs. So, but what's interesting here is right behind Austin Wayne Self, Sal, just 2 points behind him are Johnny Sauter and Carson Hocevar, the rookie, and they're tied at 102 points back. So very, very close, just 2 points back from Austin Wayne Self in that 10th spot. Then there's Brett Moffitt and Rafael Lassard. And if we go down to 15th, it's Chandler Smith at 16 points back of Austin Rowe himself. So you can see where there's going to be a lot of jockeying for position for this bubble in the Truck Series.
Oh, yeah, you know, there's going to be a lot of them. I'm sure, you know, I mean, I'm sure we should see a win by Sheldon Creed and hopefully, you know, Matt Crafton, you know, before the end of the season too, you know, which is really going to shake, you know, which is really going to shake everything up too. Chandler Smith is really one to watch for too. You know, he's down in 15th.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think, you know, given the fact, you know, that he has a little bit more luck, he should technically be up there, you know, up in the top 10. So, it's gonna be an interesting thing, you know. Interesting, you know, as we start to get to the, you know, we start to get to the middle, and then you know, even towards the second half of the season.
Yeah. I really think that the drivers to really watch this season are those drivers that are on that bubble, from 10th all the way down to 15th or 16th. Because as this season progresses, and like you say, when you get to the halfway mark, A lot of these drivers are going to get better than they were during the first half of the season. And we're going to see some drivers that are below the line right now that are probably going to come up with some victories and put themselves into the playoffs, which will displace some of the drivers if they're not in that, if they're not securely in the top 10.
Yeah, and then we could also see a couple of surprises too, as far as drivers that'll break into the into the win column. There's still a few. I mean, Todd Gilliam has been knocking on the door. He just needs to have a good run. Then of course we got Brett Moffitt and Grant Infinger, who's also Christian Eckes has always shown, some, a lot of promise, on different, on different, different occasions. And it's good. It's going to be a good, ending to the season. Once we start getting, towards the middle and towards the end of the season, there's going to be a lot of, like you said, there's going to be a lot of shakeups. Hopefully, we get more race wins by the regulars, because I think Kyle Busch still has a few more races that he could still run in the Truck Series, which we know he's going to use those up.
Without a doubt. We mentioned how Savino the third is making his Truck Series debut at Richmond. He's actually racing for Jordan Anderson Racing, so that's kind of cool to see. So look for him to be racing. I'm trying to see if I can see a car number here. I don't. But, yeah, watch for him to be racing at Richmond. Huh?
Yeah, he's running the number three truck.
Oh, that's right, the number three. That's right. And then another thing of note is John Hunter and Taylor Nemechek had their first child. A girl named Aspen Palmer Nemechek was born on April the 3rd. So kind of really good news there for John Hunter.
Yeah, it is. Anytime, you look at John Hunter Nemechek, he still looks like he's like 15 years old.
Oh.
15, 16 years old. He doesn't even look like he's old. He doesn't look like he's old enough to have a kid yet.
They announced on April the 3rd that the baby was actually born on March 31st. So they had some pictures that they tweeted over on Twitter. So if you want to kind of check that out, you can follow John Hunter Nemechek at JH Nemechek and see those pictures. So that's some of the news that's coming out there with regard to a couple of the drivers. Also, Mike Wallace and Josh Rayom have both been reinstated by NASCAR, so those drivers are now eligible to race again as well.
Yeah, I've seen that about them coming. I guess they went through the classes, and so they're ready to see what happens if they can get a ride. See if Wallace can pick up a ride before the end of the season.
Mm-hmm. Also, NASCAR has announced that they're going to allow limited hospitality starting at Darlington Raceway. So that's good news for a lot of fans as well, because we haven't had that with the pandemic. So you can see that's lightening up a little bit. That'll happen the weekend of May 7th through the 9th. So those folks who are over in the Darlington area and can make that race, that's really good news for those fans.
And it's funny because with the pandemic, it just hit different. It just hit different, in every state. Every state has different restrictions. So you go from.
Mm-hmm.
You go from state to state, and the restrictions are all different.
Exactly. So, just keep watching for more news to come out, because I think as the season goes on, we'll see more and more good news. At least I've got my fingers crossed for that, Sal. Another big announcement is Brad Goss is going to make his truck series debut at the Circuit of Americas with CMI Motorsports. He'll be driving the number 49 that weekend, and that's a race that I'm really looking forward to this year.
Yeah, that's going to be a really interesting race. To see the trucks get out there and mash it up out there.
On the road course.
Again, it's going to be another unknown. I'm not sure how. I don't think NASCAR has said anything about if they're going to allow, any practicing or qualifying. I think they're probably going to do the qualifying they haven't done, but as far as, letting them get out there and practice like they did when they brought the Roval in.
Exactly. Well, another driver, some people who follow the sports car racing world will recognize this name, Cameron Lawrence. He's a sports car racing champion, announced that he's making his Camping World Truck Series debut with Rayon Brothers, racing the number 33, also at the Circuit of the Americas. So I think we'll see some new names racing that event. A lot of new names.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure we are. Probably even some of the Cup drivers are going to get out there, because this is going to be the first season, the first year, that they actually get to race on that track. And, when you think about it, it's a Formula One track, big road course, it's a lot longer than any of the other road courses they race on.
Mm-hmm. And you remember Jessica Friesen had planned to run at Bristol on dirt, and with the rain delay, it kind of altered her plans considerably. But now she's announced that she's shifting her focus to race at Knoxville. So when they have the race at Knoxville, she's going to be behind the wheel of the number 62 Toyota at Knoxville during that race weekend out there in Iowa. So I think that's really good news.
Yeah, it is. I'm curious if Stuart Friesen's wife is going to try to make a stab, try to make the field out there too, since it's another dirt track.
Right. Well, they're going to race out there in July, and exactly, this is the other dirt track that's on the schedule. So she mentioned it on SiriusXM NASCAR radio that she was planning to do that. So I think it's going to be a lot of fun to see both Stuart and Jessica driving on dirt out there at Knoxville in July.
Yeah, we just got to hope that the pandemic doesn't shut it down like it did over here at Bristol. They weren't allowed to, qualify, and hopefully they allow outside teams, the champs, to also make the show.
Exactly. Well, that was a rain delay. It had more to do with the rain delay than the pandemic. But hopefully we'll pray for dry weather and enough humidity to keep the track workable, but dry enough that we don't have to worry about a saturated track like we did at Bristol.
Yeah, that was awful.
Yes.
That was
very disappointing.
That was a disaster. It was a disaster waiting to happen, but it never really materialized into a major disaster, but it was disaster enough to where it was,
it was
disaster enough. Yeah.
One of the most anticipated races of the year was that Bristol dirt race.
Yeah, and now they're announcing they're going to have it again next year, so.
Mm-hmm.
I guess we'll see what happens.
Yeah, did you see that they were talking about possibly putting a roof on it, Bristol?
I didn't see that they were going to do that.
They're looking at
there's
it.
There's a whole
so
bunch of...
There's a lot of things that they've got to take into consideration, but we'll see what happens.
Oh, man, can you imagine the cost it would cost them to put a roof over that place?
It would be a pretty penny, that's for sure. We talked a little bit about it on Hot Topics last Thursday. But, yeah, it's going to be a storyline to follow as they kind of research it and analyze whether or not it's feasible for them to do it. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, I hope they don't, because racing is meant to be outside, not under a, you know, not under a, you know, an awning or roof or anything like that.
Exactly. Okay, let's go ahead and move on, Sal, to the NASCAR Xfinity Series. They did race this weekend out at Martinsville, and it was the Cookout 250. They actually started it on Friday night, and they finished it 40 hours later. Josh Berry came out as the winner at Martinsville for his first career victory after his 13th start. Noah Gregson finished second. He won the $100,000 Dash for Cash bonus. Daniel Hemric finished third, followed by Ty Gibbs and Brandon Jones rounding out the top five. Then it was Austin Cindric, Harrison Burton, Justin Haley, Justin Allgaier, and Michael Lynette rounding out the top 10. Gregson won the first stage, which concluded on Friday evening, while Hemric picked up his third stage victory of the season in stage two. There were 13 lead changes among 10 drivers and 12 cautions for 75 laps, and it was an interesting race.
Yeah, it was. It was a really good race. You know, it was, Ty Gibbs, I think Ty Gibbs led. He went up there and he led a few laps too. It was, it got down towards the end and it looked like Noah was going to catch Josh, but, you know, just didn't have enough car left or anything. And Josh ended up picking up the win. It's from what social media has been saying, it was a very emotional win for Dale Jr. You know, he came on and said that he's never cried for a race win like that. You know, not even when he's won a race, you know, and, you know, he said he cried for his, you know, for this win. Daniel Hemric looked like
earlier
he was going to be the race. Yeah. Daniel Hemric looked like he was going to be the race winner.
Just to add on to Josh Berry, the last driver to win in the number eight was Dale Earnhardt Jr., and that was in 2006 at Michigan. So this is Josh Berry has the very next day taken this long for the number eight to go to victory lane. So it was an emotional win for that car number.
Yeah, he ran a heck of a race. He ran a heck of a good race, and I was happy to see him. I was happy to see him win it.
The rookie took these drivers to school, that's for sure. It was a fun race to watch. There were 13 lead changes among 9 drivers. The next race, by the way, for these guys is April the 24th, again, at Talladega Super Speedway. The margin of victory was 0.590 seconds. So that was a close finish. Do you have the points for us?
I guess the owner of Camping World came out and tweeted that, you know, that he would sponsor Josh Berry at Talladega, and if he could win Talladega, that he would sponsor him the next 4 races after that.
Oh, that's awesome. Sal, do you want to go over the points report?
Yeah, let's do the points. So the points as we look at it now, it's here they are right here.
I got to tell you what Marcus Lemonis is doing with sponsoring a lot of these drivers. It really is fantastic. Just trying to fill that
space. It is, you know.
Pulling it up.
Yeah, it is, you know, but it's funny because there's a few fans that said it's great, but they said, is NASCAR hurting really that bad that the series sponsor has to sponsor all these different cars because NASCAR can't pull in any new sponsorship?
Well, I don't think it's that necessarily. I think Marcus Lemonis is just putting the money out there. He did that all on his own. You know, just to say, I want these guys, I want these new drivers to have these opportunities. And he's gone out and said, whoever needs money, contact me. So the drivers are doing it, and I think that's fantastic.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it is. And, you know, what he's doing, you know, it's not cheap.
No, it's not.
You know, so.
Okay, so let's go ahead and hear the points report.
Okay, so at the points, we're looking at Austin Cindric is leading the points. Daniel Hamrick second, Harrison Burton third, Justin Haley fourth, and Jeb Burton is rounding out the top five so far this season. Austin Cindric, of course, leading with his two wins. And then from there, then we go down the list, you know, to the other drivers, you know, who have also picked up wins this year.
Okay. The top 12, I think, are the ones that go to the playoffs. So.
Yeah, to the playoffs. Yeah, then the next one from 6th on to 12th would be 6th is A.J. Allmendinger. 7th is Myatt Snider. 8th is Justin Allgaier. 9th is Jeremy Clements. 10th is Brandon Jones. 11th is Noah Gragson. And on the bubble is Michael Annette, who is only, wow, he's got a pretty good jump on Brandon Brown, who's 13th. He's 10 points on top of Brandon Brown. And actually, Michael Annette and Noah Gragson are both on the bubble since they both have 168. They both have 168 mm-hmm. points on both sides.
Okay, yeah, that's pretty cool. Now, Ty Gibbs, only 3 races in the books, but he does have a win. Also, Josh Berry, who's 17th, has a win. So those guys, if they decide to race the rest of this year and go after that championship, they would displace Noah Gragson and Michael Annette because they have wins, whereas they do not. So that's something to kind of keep in mind here as well.
Yeah, and also I think there was an announcement made that Santino Ferrucci was going to run an Indy car. I don't know if he's running an Indy 500 or if he's just going to run an Indy race, but I think there was an announcement made earlier this week or over the weekend that he was going to be running an Indy car. Hear anything
okay,
about that?
Yeah. I have not, but that's good news. It'll be fun to watch him. He's been, I give him credit for, you know, coming into the Xfinity Series and racing this year. I like seeing those kind of crossovers.
Yeah, because here it is. Let me see. Yeah, because actually he did come from IndyCar.
Yes.
I guess he
so
came from IndyCar,
really
and then he ran the Formula Twos with the F1 series, and but they said I can't find it, but I heard something earlier that he was going to be running that he was going to be back in IndyCar. He's running the Indy 500. He's going to run the Indy 500 for just the one-off race. Here it is right here.
Okay.
Santino Ferrucci to drive in Indianapolis 500 with Ray Hall Letterman. Madigan Racing. So he'll be a teammate with Graham Rahal.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. So, yeah, yes. That'll bring a lot of fans over there to watch the Indy 500, but it'll also bring them back to watch him in the Xfinity Series as well. So definitely looking forward to that. And yeah, I see that now, too, with Graham.
With Ray Hall Letterman.
Ray Hall. Yes, yes. So some other news that's happening with the series. We mentioned the limited hospitality at Darlington. We talked a little earlier about the scuffle between Greg Gaulding and Joe Graff Jr. after the Xfinity race at Martinsville. A little misunderstanding between those guys, huh?
Yeah, there was, you know, and I felt bad because Blaine Perkins was caught up in it too, and we've had Blaine Perkins on our show, you know, a few times. You know, he's a driver from out here from Bakersfield, California, and he's only running a few races, I think 5 or 6 Xfinity races this year. And when Graff and Gaulding had their little bump session, it happened that Blaine was right up in front of Graff, and Graff tapped the back, got to the side door of Perkins and ended his day. And then afterwards, then Gaulding and Joe Graff Jr. ended up in a fist fight at inside the pit garage area.
Well, hopefully everybody walked away okay, and hopefully those guys will have a chance to talk this week and kind of get things smoothed out before the next race. We'll have to wait and see how that continues to play out.
That's going to be interesting because Joe Graff came out and said he goes, you know, something about you know, Gaulding, you know, thinks he's like the muscle in the garage here or something to that effect. And then Graff said, he goes, but he's going to eat ice packs when he gets home. He goes, because that's how hard I hit him. So,
well,
hopefully they iron things out. And, it got into a pretty interesting, arguments back and forth on Twitter because of the fact that they used to be teammates and they both ran for the same team, and you know, and
mm-hmm.
of course, you know, the ego comes out in all of them. But
well, and it happens, you know, tensions are always high during the race. Everybody's got the adrenaline rush going on, and sometimes it doesn't take much for the blood to boil, if you will. And hopefully, like I say, when they kind of sit back and look at it, hopefully it's not as bad as it looked at the time. We'll have to wait and see if it continues on. But hopefully those guys will get a chance to talk it out and kind of put it all behind them. Some other good news here. Go ahead.
Go ahead. You know, it just real quick, it's funny. Man, we sure are seeing a lot of fighting from from the Xfinity Series this year.
Yeah, there has been a few already. It's early in the season, and it's already kind of intense. Another bit of news here is Austin Cindric is going to be returning to Cup Series competition at Richmond. So he'll be racing the Toyota Owners 400, and he'll be in a Verizon car in the number 33. So look for Austin Cindric to be in that Cup Series race.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. He's getting a lot of seat time in the Cup race this year. You know, I guess they're getting him ready, you know, to, you know, for when he makes the move next season. So, you know, you might as well give him all the seat time he could possibly get. He can get used to the series, running longer races, running against a lot tougher field, you know, and just everything, you know, that just the transition, you know, that all the drivers have talked about, you know, going from Xfinity to Cup, you know, it's really a huge, you know, How did 101 driver say it's like a big old wake up call, you know, once you get there.
Yes, indeed. Some other news from Martinsville is concerns the number 99 of Daniel Suarez. His crew chief, Travis Mack, for Trackhouse Racing, was ejected from the infield at Martinsville for an improperly attached ballast in the jack post. So Jose Blasco Figueroa served as the interim crew chief for Suarez for the Blue Emu Maximum Pain Relief 500. He was Suarez's crew chief at Atlanta earlier this year when Max served another suspension for two loose lug nuts at Phoenix. So NASCAR further reviewed it and said that the team has been penalized with the loss of 10 NASCAR Cup Series championship driver owner points. They will start at the rear of the field for the Blue Emu 500, and the crew chief, as we mentioned, was ejected from the event. So that was kind of big news regarding Daniel Suarez.
Yeah, it was, and even during the, well, I guess we'll talk about that later, but during the cup race, his car got fire, and nobody went to the car, and he was standing on the wall looking like, hey, is someone going to come put my car out, or are they just going to let it burn to the ground?
Wow, that's weird. Yeah, you expect fast service when something like that's going on, so you got to wonder what took them so long to respond. Here's some news that you'll like, Sal. Sonoma Raceway is welcoming fans to the NASCAR race weekend.
Yeah, I got the email from Sonoma, and I read through it. I thought that was, you know, pretty neat. I'm just curious what they're going to do about letting us, you know, if they're going to let us have access, you know, to get our photo passes this year, you know, and shoot the, you know, the cup race. I know the ARCA West race won't be that hard because I can go through Chris Wright and get my pass through there. But I'm curious if they're going to let us, you know, if they're going to let us do the whole weekend. It's just Friday, Saturday, and Sunday anyways. But, you know, to be able to, you know, to do the cup race on Sunday too, that's going to be interesting to see what happens there. But that's neat, you know, just to hear all in all, you know, that the tracks are finally starting to open, you know, and they're getting the fans back. Sonoma, they get a good crowd every year, you know, because it's out in wine country, and you know, it's a real big. They got seats all around the 12 turn track, so you know that's great news when you start hearing, you know, the tracks are opening up.
Yes, it is. But we're just about to have your guest show up. He's not here yet. But why don't you give us a little bit of background on your guest, Sal?
Okay, our guest is Dylan Zampa. He's a racer from out here in the northern part of California. He's another finalist for the Kawicki Driver Developmental Program, which we talked about 2 weeks ago. We had Cole Raz on. He told us, you know, about, you know, what, you know, how he felt, you know, about getting picked and what it means to him. You know, we'll get to talk to Dylan about the same thing, you know, a little bit about, you know, his career. He was, he grew up racing, basically out of Madera. He, you know, he did a lot of racing out there, picked up a big win last year in Madera, you know, which we'll talk about that race too, beating his brother out. And got to pocket the $5,000 in first place cash. And kid's got a lot of talent, you know, a lot of promise. And he raced this past weekend out here at Urindale too in the pro lates. He doesn't race in the tour race, but he runs the pro lates, and he also runs the pro lates over at Madera for their MAV TV program that they have over there. So really
here,
neat
Sal,
family.
If you want to go ahead and. If you want to go ahead and introduce them.
Yeah, so let's let's go ahead and welcome our next guest, Dylan Zampa, to our show this week. First of all, Dylan, congratulations on the nomination, you know, for the for the Kuwaiti Driver Developmental Program, and also for the second place finish this past weekend at Irwindale Speedway with the, you know, running the Spears Pro League division.
Yeah, thank you. You know, our team worked really hard last weekend getting both cars dialed in, so can't thank them enough for giving me the opportunity to run up front.
You know, and actually it was a very, very interesting race, you know, a very good run race. It seems like Irwindale kind of fixed that little bump right there in 3 and 4, because I know for the showdown, it seemed like you guys were launching off of it, and I was watching, you know, a lot of the drivers, you know, if you guys were, you know, kind of running a little bit lower, you know, back in that groove, it seems like that spot got a little bit more flat. Doesn't seem like you were getting that much, it wasn't too bumpy through there.
Yeah, usually, to get around 3 and 4 really good, you kind of want to put your left side below that yellow line and kind of go over it. But like during the race, though, you kind of want to hit it because it kind of helps your car turn, because that track is just super aggressive on the tires. So it just really, it eats up the tires, and like there's no tread left, like on lap, like I feel like on like lap 10, you're just sideways the whole time. So, you know, you got to really pace yourself in that race and not, you know, push right from the get-go like some people do.
You know, and actually the last race out here for the All-Star Showdown, you and Jeremy had put on a really good show. I mean, there was a couple of times that you were right up on Jeremy on his quarter panel, and I thought Dylan's just going to give him just that little shove, you know, just to kind of move him out of the way. But then, you know, you guys, you know, I understand the respect that you guys have for each other, you know, being friends, you know, and you know, all the history you have together. But that was a really good race. And of course, then you come back Saturday, you know, you finish second, you know, with Tyler Reif, you know, who actually, you know, had led a, you know, a good portion of that, the race on Saturday night.
Yeah, me and Jeremy, we have a really good relationship. So usually if me and him are racing, it's always clean passing. And, like, we don't ever really bump each other, because his dad and Dwayne Sharp all help my dad and my brother with setup and all that stuff. So, you know, without Mike, you know, my car wouldn't be as fast as it would be right now. So I can't thank Mike and Dwayne Sharp enough for the super fast setup. But, yeah, me, Jeremy, and Tyler had a really good race. There was a little bit of bumping with me and Tyler, but just, you know, good hard racing. That, I mean, that track just eats up tires. So me and him were just sideways. So we were kind of leaning on each other, but, you know, just respect off the track. And so me and Tyler have a really good relationship, so.
So kind of give us a little bit of history on how you got started racing, you know, what age did you start, you know, and what was it that, you know, from all the sports, you know, as you're growing up, especially, you know, still being in school, you know, you got the, you know, chance at football, you know, you got basketball, you got baseball, you know, different sports, but what was it that drew you to auto racing?
My dad, he started racing when he was 5. His dad, my grandpa, he never raced race cars. He always built them from ground up, and they were always super fast. And then my grandpa put my dad in racing, and my dad raced from age 5 to, like, 24. And then when my brother turned around, like, 6 or 7, he hung up the steering wheel and pursued my brother racing. And then I think my brother was, like, 8 or 9, and I turned 5, and my dad put me in racing also, and we started out in quarter midgets, and I raced those for like 9-10 years, something like that, and we had a lot of success in that. We went back east a couple times. We went to Indiana. We actually won the Brickyard there, so they set up a mini track inside of the Indianapolis Motor Speedway in the parking lot on the inside. So that was really cool to win that. There was over 600 cars entered in that race. So to win that race was really big for me and my dad.
Wow. And then let's also talk about your big win at Madera too. You know, you beat your brother out, for the big prize out there, you know, which everyone on the West Coast knows, you know, that Madera has their, you know, their MAV-TV, series, you know, where Kane Shepherd, you know, offers the anywhere from $5,000 to $10,000 to win races out there.
Yeah, Kenny puts on a really good show. He puts a lot of time and effort into making those races really big. And when he puts up those big pays, he gets a lot of cars. He gets the High Point Racing team. He gets all the DOS crew. He gets me and my brother. He gets a lot of people. He gets, like, the Sherminska crew. Just a lot of big names show up to those big races that he has, and it's a very good show. It's always, like, the top 10 or top 15, always within, like, a tenth or two-tenths. So it's always really tough racing there. Oh, you got to always bring your A-game when you show up to Madera.
Yeah, you do. And you know what? Let's talk a little about the Kawicki driver developmental program.
Yeah. So, in 2019, I signed up for it, and I didn't make it to the semifinalists. But when 2021 came around, I was like, I'm gonna put my head down and really, really dig hard in racing and social media and all that stuff. And I got picked to be in the semifinalists, and I was super excited to make the semifinalists because my brother made that. And you know, Tom asked me a couple questions, and I answered them as best as I could. And Tom saw something in me that no one else saw, so he picked me, which is really, really wild because, you know, just a 17-year-old kid from Napa, California. So it's really a honor to be picked into that. So currently right now we're putting our head down, and we're taking our time with racing and trying to finish in the top five as many races as we can, get some points for the Spears and get some points for the Kawicki stuff also.
Interesting. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to the show host, Sharon, because I know she has some more questions about the program and about your driving career. Sharon?
Hi, Dylan. I'm so glad you were able to come on tonight.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Well, I'm real interested in this Kawicki Driver Development Program and the fact that you're a finalist. It's a huge accomplishment. What was the hardest thing? I know you said the first time you tried out, it didn't work out. So what did you do differently this time that really helped you? And what was the hardest part to become a finalist?
To me personally, what got me in, I think, was just being truthful, you know, putting everything out there, you know, like if you wrecked a race, you know, putting a lot of like small details in there to like kind of catch their eye, you know, I talked about my quarter midget career, and then I kind of skipped over to the late model stuff and showed in my first pro late model race I won, and I raced legend cars a couple times, you know, just putting all the little details in there that makes a big difference when it comes to that type of stuff.
Yeah, I'm guessing because it kind of shows that you know about those details and have that kind of depth of knowledge about your car and what's happening with your racing. So that's really cool to hear that did make a difference. Now, when you think about the Kawicki Driver Development Program, and hopefully you're one of the finalists, so when do you find out if you've made it into the program?
I'm already like in the program. They already did the semifinalist stuff. So I'm one of the Kawicki Seven. So it started April 1st. So far in my Kawicki start, you have to race a minimum of 15 races. So far we have two races under our belt, and we'll be back at Madera Speedway in 2 weeks for the round three of the Mad TV series. So we'll be back there, and we'll be stronger than we were the first time. It was a while since I've been there, so getting the car dialed in from all the other races we've raced was a little difficult, but I mean, we got it dialed in. We came home with a third place in our first race there, so we'll be back in 2 weeks, and we should be able to get another podium finish or even a win.
Have you had a chance to talk to any of the other drivers that have kind of won, been at the top of the list there, to see what their experience was and if they were able to give you any tips?
Jeremy Doss, he actually won the Kulwicki Cup in 2019. So I've been talking to him, and he's kind of been helping me with social media stuff, telling me, kind of guiding me through all the little stuff that matters. So with community service, he's been helping me with that a little bit, telling me kind of like go big or, go small this time, go big. But he's been helping me on and off the racetrack. We talk we message almost every day. So me and him always are talking. So me and him are really good buddies. I'm talking to Michelle Martin, Horsepower Project. I'm always talking to her about stuff, write-ups, all that stuff. So she helps me. Jeremy helps me. Mike Doss helps me. Dwayne Sharp helps me. My whole family, just everyone that kind of supports me and my brother's race car, they all kind of pitch in sometimes when I go to the food bank or something to buy food to give back to the community. So just all the little things that kind of matters to me.
Yeah, that's very, very cool. Now, what are your aspirations? Do you want to go into NASCAR at some point or maybe race in the ARCA Menards Series at all?
That would be a really big accomplishment if I can get in that. But it's very hard, to get into the ARCA Series. I know all those big teams, they look for a lot of stuff and certain stuff. So, just trying to check off some check marks that I need to be able to, get a win in the Spears would be a really big accomplishment to check off. To finish second in the points and get that SPS ride for the 2022 season would also be a very big accomplishment.
Okay. Well, we wish you the best, Dylan, in your pursuit of all of that. And are there any other shout-outs that you want to make before we say goodbye?
I'd like to thank all my sponsors so far, Anderson Logging, Valley Fabrication, PFC Brakes, CNC Carburetors, All-Pro Coating, Ernest Performance, my dad, my mom, Chris Kaiser, Matthew Kaiser, Michelle Martin, Dwayne Sharp, Mike Doss, Jeremy Doss, all the Doss crew for putting in a lot of work to help me and my brother be fast at the racetrack. So I can't thank all my sponsors and the Doss crew enough for getting me this far.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. So, Sal, I know you want to say goodbye as well.
Yeah. Actually, Dylan, I just have one more question for you before we let you go. How hard is it to balance your schedule, your driving schedule, and especially now, with the Kulwicki developmental program with your schoolwork?
It's not too hard. My teachers in Napa, at least, they know what's going on in the world. They're dealing with it also. So they're not really given too much homework, but they give a little bit of homework during the week. So I usually get it all done on Thursday night before I leave on Friday to go to all the racetracks. But like when I go to Irwindale and probably when I go to Kern County Raceway, when we leave on Thursday, I'll take my Chromebook with me, and on Friday morning before practice, I'll hop on my Zoom classes, make sure I'm not missing any homework or not missing anything important like a test or a quiz, something like that. So I'm pretty good at balancing that stuff. So, it's not terribly hard for me, I'd like to be homeschooled, but my parents won't let me. My parents won't let me do that.
So what's it like to have the fans back finally? After racing, a whole season, with no fans in the stands, and just basically, I guess most of the drivers we talked to, just going through the motions, we still haven't had how we always have the autograph session before the races, which I'm sure those will probably pick up here pretty quick. But I mean, going a whole season without, not having no yelling or screaming from the fans, having your friends come down and watch and other family members.
Yeah, it was definitely actually Stockton 99 Speedway for round two of the Spears Series. They had fans, and I walked out there for the main event, and I got out of my car. I was like, wow, this feels so weird because they were cheering, and that was before the race started. So it was overwhelming to me, at least. I was like, wow, there's a lot of people up in those stands. And so it's very good. You know, finally we get to actually, you know, get out of our car and actually, you know, cheer to the crowd for winning a race or something like that. So it's very cool to have fans back. So I'm excited to be back at Madera. They're supposed to have fans back for that race. So excited to be back at Madera Speedway with fans.
Awesome. Well, Dylan, I just want to thank you again for coming on the show, me and Sharon. And, you know, we want to wish you all, you know, of course, you know, the best of luck, you know, in the season, you know, coming up, you know, as you start to, you know, progress, you know, into the program. And hopefully, you know, you end up, you know, on top of, you know, everything. And with that, you know, we want to wish you, like I said, the best of luck the rest of the season. And hopefully, you know, we'll get you back on again, you know, grab a race win. We have a segment before we start. It's called Winner Circle. You know, we usually get our winners, you know, inside, you know, which is the first segment of the show. So hopefully, you know, we can get you back then. And with that, we just want to say once again, good luck, and thanks for being on the show, and we'll talk to you at the racetrack.
Thank you. Hope I'll be back in the winner's circle at the Stockton for the next Beers race.
All right.
Sounds good.
Okay, thanks.
All right, thank you.
Go ahead.
Okay, good night. All right, Sal, that was a fun interview with Dylan Zampa there, so I hope he does come back in the winner's circle.
Oh, I'm sure we'll see him back. He's he's on a mission right now, and you know, he's a really good racer, you know, really clean racer. You know, I was, you know, like a, you know, I was talking to, you know, about the first race at Orindale for the showdown. You know, him and, you know, Jeremy, you know, were, you know, bumping and banging, and then this past weekend too, you know, with Tyler Rife. And I'll tell you, these young drivers, they really put on a heck of a show. It's amazing when you go through the driver lineup and you look at the average age of the driver, how much it's dropped from, like, back, I don't even know how many years ago back, but it was like, you know, in the 20s, and now, you know, they're like down, you know, 17, 18, 16 years old, you know, and you take the average age, it's just dropped tremendously. But the talent level is there, I'll tell you that. They really put on one heck of a good show out there.
Well, that's really good to know. And we'll keep an eye on what goes on. But let's go ahead and move on before we run out of time. Let's go ahead and move on to the Cup Series review at Martinsville. It was actually won by Martin at Martinsville. The number 19 of Martin Truex Jr. won the rain-delayed Blue Emu Maximum Pain Relief 500 at Martinsville this Sunday. The win was his second of the year and his second win at Martinsville and the 29th career victory for Martin Truex. The number 9 of Chase Elliott finished second, followed by Denny Hamlin, William Byron, and Kyle Larson. The pole sitter, Joey Logano, finished next, followed by Christopher Bell, Tyler Reddick, Kevin Harvick, and then Kyle Busch. The race concluded on Sunday after being postponed with 42 laps complete on Saturday night, but it was delayed because of rain. Truex took the lead under pit stops during the final caution of the race. He was the leader as the race went back to green with 42 laps left. Hamlin passed him on the next lap, held the lead until 15 laps to go when Truex grabbed the lead back and pulled away for nearly a two-second margin of victory. Stages 1 and 2 were actually won by Ryan Blaney. There were 18 lead changes among 7 drivers, 15 cautions for 102 yellow flag laps, and the average speed of the race was 67.315 miles per hour. So, pretty cool to see the finishes there. Anthony Alfredo was actually the highest finishing rookie of the race.
I'll tell you, that race was, there was a lot of wrecks, there was a lot of bumping, there was a lot of grinding. I'm surprised there wasn't a fight after that.
There was a big one.
Oh, and then they had the big one too that blocked up the whole track. But gosh, there was a lot of bumping and banging, and I mean, I thought for sure these guys were going to start fighting after.
Yeah, it's unusual to see a big one on a short track like that, but they said it was reminiscent of the big one at Talladega. So it took out 15 cars, I believe, and I think a lot of people just kind of chalk it up to short track racing.
Yeah, and that's about what they did. And Ryan Blaney looked really tough. I mean, like you said, he won the first two stages. I actually thought Ryan was going to end up winning the race. And Kyle Larson was even part of the melee in there too, you know, bumping and trying to get around, you know, drivers. Joey Logano was especially aggressive out there. And but you know, Martin Truex, I don't know, he avoided the wreck and ended up back in victory lane again.
Yeah, yeah, it really is amazing. You know, a race at Martinsville is always fun. It's good short track racing. There were several cars that were out because of the accident. Michael McDowell was one of them, as was Daniel Suarez, Brad Keselowski, and he'd had a couple scuffles before that. Alex Bowman, Justin Haley, Ryan Preece, and Corey LaJoy were all out due to accidents throughout the race. Eric Jones actually had a problem with his rear gear that kind of put him back at the end of the field as well. So do you have a points report up, Sal?
Yeah, we got the points. Is let me see if I have them right here. Driver points, we have a shakeup this week. I guess we don't. I thought Martin Truex had taken over the top spot.
Nope. Well, he,
but I guess he did.
In a way, he did, because he's got two wins and nobody else has the two wins. So in a way,
so,
he did.
I mean, as far as the playoff points, Martin Truex did take over. But in the regular season points, until we get to the playoffs, but for regular season right now, we still got Denny Hamlin leading the points with zero wins. Martin Truex in second with two wins. Joey Logano in third with one win. Kyle Larson in fourth with one win. Ryan Blaney in fifth with one win. William Byron in sixth with one win. Chase Elliott, who is still winless, in seventh. And Kevin Harvick round out the top eight out of 16 without a win. So our top eight is gosh, I mean, you know, when you look at you, some good names and names that don't have a win, and we're already eight races in the season, and Hamlin, Harvick are still, and Keselowski are still without wins.
Mm-hmm. And Keselowski is ninth.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's right. I hadn't gotten to Keselowski yet. Yeah, that's right. Okay. I should stop it. Yeah, Harvick still hasn't gotten a win yet. And then from there, then we go ninth.
Amazing.
Huh? Yeah, it is.
It's amazing.
And then from there, we go to Brad Keselowski, ninth, Christopher Bell, 10th, Kyle Busch, 11th, Chris Bell, of course, we know has that one win, Austin Dillon, 12th, Ricky Stenhouse, 13th, Chris Buescher in the 14th spot, Kurt Busch in the 15th spot, and on the, actually, he's not on the bubble, but in the 16th spot is Michael McDowell with his one win. So he's already seated inside the top 16. So, man, what a, you start looking, and Kyle Busch is still holding on to that 11th spot. Chris Bell, like I said, is in 10th. He'll move up with his one win. And you look at, you know, all the other drivers. And then, of course, outside looking in is Ryan Newman in the 18th spot, who slowly crept up, you know, and, mm-hmm. Into a contentious spot along with Alex Bowman.
Exactly. So it's really interesting to see some of these names that are below the line that could potentially get a win before it's all said and done, which would displace some of those guys that don't have a win yet. So that's how important these wins are. And you got to think that people like Chase Elliott, Kevin Harvick, Brad Keselowski, Kyle Busch, those guys are going to get a win before it's all said and done. You've got to think. But who knows in this season what's going to happen?
Yes, and you know, and that's the same thing with, you forgot to mention Kurt Busch, who is also who should also probably end up with the you know win before you know before the end of before the season
yeah.
ends. You know, and then of course you know, and then you look at Ross Chastain, who's down at 25th spot, who's also. You know, he's another driver who we've seen him, you know, win in different divisions, different times. So, but that top 16 is really an interesting.
It's an interesting group of drivers for sure. And Denny Hamlin, you got to think he's going to come up with a win before this is all said and done as well. But he, one thing you can say about Denny Hamlin is he has been very, very consistent, and that's why he is leading the points.
Yes, it is, and you know, he's just he's been consistent. You know what, and you know when, and then when you look, Martin Truex is doing what he's done every season since they started this with the playoff points. Look at Truex's playoff points. He has 11 playoff points already. And the only drivers close to him are Kyle Larson and Ryan Blaney with 8.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But
and that's with 8 races already in to the season. So 5 more races will be halfway through the regular season.
Yeah, he has a lot of playoff points compared to first place. Our first place driver, which is Denny Hamlin, only has 3.
Yeah, it's amazing.
And Kevin Harvick has. And Kevin Harvick has 0.
I know. Isn't that crazy?
We've seen Kevin Harvick, and Martin Truex. You know, they start racking them up. He doesn't have any.
I know. It really is wild. But you got to think that at some point he's going to come through with a victory. So I wouldn't count any of these guys out yet. I think there's still a chance that some of these guys that have goose eggs right now are going to end up with a victory before it is all said and done. But, Sal, we're just about up at the top of the hour. Any final thoughts you want to leave us with?
No, I mean it was a good show tonight. You know it's just you know I don't know I you know just a little bit like what we talk you know off the show with the way the NASCAR has the you know schedule you know with the truck series is you know as long as they're off and the Xfinity series you know then you know the thing with the NASCAR with the ARCA Menards series you know the long span they have between races, you know, it's kind of, in a sense, it's kind of depressing, especially with the West Series, you know, because I'm out here on the West Coast, you know, to see they're only going to run eight points races for the West. You know, they've been sitting dry, you know, they're going to be sitting dry for over 2 months. But, you know, either way, you know, it is what it is. You know what, we just got to enjoy, you know, what we have and, you know, and just glad to have the fans back. It was really neat to walk into Irwindale on Saturday night, you know, and see the fans back in the stands and, you know, and you know, hopefully, you know, it's a trend that continues out here. And, you know, as the numbers drop, you know what, the capacity as far as, you know, letting the capacity, you know, hopefully, you know, they'll start letting more and, you know, each time it gets, you know, every time it starts to open up more and more.
Yes, indeed. Well, I've sent a message to James. We'll see if he's able to co-host for you next Monday night. I understand you won't be able to be on the show next Monday. So hopefully James will be able to step in. And I've sent him the text message here. And if he can't do it, then I'll go to Andy or Jay and see if they can do it. But I hope you have a good birthday next Monday night, Sal.
Yeah, we're going celebrating my 25th birthday next week. So actually, it's on Sunday, but we're going on Monday to go celebrate it. So.
Okay. Well, enjoy your 25th birthday. Ha ha ha. And
turning 30 again gets rough.
30.
Yeah, somewhere around
for
there.
The
20th
time,
I know. I'm gonna know my 30, 25 or 30. One of the two. I gotta go back and relook at my birth certificate.
Okay. Well, you can give us the update in a couple of weeks when you come back, and
all right.
Let us know how your celebration went. But thanks, Sal, for all
okay.
that you do, and we'll look forward to seeing you in a couple of weeks. Happy birthday.
All right. Thanks, everyone. Have a good weekend. We'll talk to you later. Good night.
Okay. Good night, everybody. Okay, we are past the top of the hour, and that means that we are now ready for our NASCAR Hot Topic Sound-Off. And joining us tonight, we've got a full house here. First, I'm going to go to Jay Huseman. Welcome to the show, Jay.
Well, thank you, Sharon. One time, just one time, that's all I ask, is if we can get Sal to come on Hot Topics with us. I just caught the tail end of your conversation there. I wasn't unmuted yet, but I wanted to jump in with him on the points thing. So one time, before he gets too old, before he gets into his 30s, maybe we can do that.
Okay, well, I told him he's welcome. He just has to let me know when it's a good time for him. Okay, we also have Michael Orzel here tonight.
Oh, man, it's been way too long since I've been on. Good to be back.
Yes, it has been a while, Michael, so we're glad to have you back. And also joining us is Tommy Kraft. Welcome to the show, Tommy.
Hey, how are y'all? Thanks for having me back. I'm excited to talk.
Well, we're happy that you're able to step in. We really appreciate it. So, Jay, let's have you kind of kick it off for us tonight, the first hot topic.
Well, shoot, I don't even know where to begin. Started putting up some hot topics this afternoon, and the next thing I knew, I was like, well, we got too many that we're going to be able to handle. The first one, I guess, Mike and I were just talking about this, and I truthfully almost missed it. Dale Earnhardt Jr. saying that Junior Motorsports moving to Cup is no longer out of the realm. He didn't say when. He didn't say it was a guarantee. But he did say that it was no longer not a possibility. And so I also saw on Twitter somebody had up the question of who's their first driver. So we'll start there.
Well, I think I know. But we'll see what Mike has to say. Mike, your thoughts.
Yeah, I saw the same traffic with Dale Earnhardt kind of taking the hard no off the table. It didn't sound like it was anything he was super enthusiastic to do for the 2022 season or anything. But it's like Jay said, it has gone from being a hard no to a, well, let's not say no anymore kind of a thing. There's a lot of moving pieces that are involved in there. Some are easier to take care of than others. First and foremost, I'm not sure what the ownership percentage is, but Rick Hendrick does own a portion of Junior Motorsports. I believe Rick Hendrick would have to sell his stake in the team in order to not be constituted as having additional cars beyond the four cars that Hendrick Motorsports already has. That's relatively easy to take care of, especially on paper. I think probably a bigger obstacle to overcome will be the lack of charters that Junior Motorsports has. There's a finite number of charters, and I haven't heard anything about NASCAR increasing the number of charters that are available. So that means that Junior Motorsports will have to try and find charters, one or multiple, depending on how many cars they want to field, if they want to be guaranteed not just that field entry position, but also the revenue sharing that comes along with being a chartered team. There is competition for charters that are out there right now. The 37 team of Ryan Preece currently does not have a charter at all, and the number 99 of Daniel Suarez with Trackhouse Racing, they're currently on a leased charter from the number 77 team, leased from Spire Motorsports. I believe both of those teams have full intention of running full time for the foreseeable future. So a potential additional team would be competing with those two teams already existing in the charter market, trying to purchase a charter that may be available at some time in the future. And then the third piece that is to be considered, like you said, is the driver piece. But, you know, as drivers come and drivers go, that's probably easier to take care of, especially in the future when there's a little bit more of a picture of exactly what's going to take place. But, yeah, something interesting to keep an eye on and see if it moves in that direction, all as a result of the Gen 7 car and supposedly the lower cost of operation of doing it with that car.
Yeah, that's kind of a cool feature of all of this. Tommy, your thoughts?
I'm excited. I miss DEI, and I'm glad to see that Junior wants to hopefully get involved in Cup again, because I was just seeing the other day on Twitter where Kenny Wallace was basically talking about how NASCAR misses DEI, because had DEI been huge, who knows how it could have been for the sport. So I'm super excited to see the juniors talking about this. And like everybody has been saying, it's cheaper for the car and everything and easier to get in that way. But the problem will be the charter part, because like Michael said, Suarez and I know Priest are looking, and I believe I saw something not too long back ago that Suarez's owner is having a very hard time finding a way to get it secured, actually, and they've been running well. So, I mean, and even Ryan Preece has been running well. So, tough market for sure there on the charters, but I'm sure Junior can figure out a way to get involved if he really wants to, and too soon to be talking about a driver for sure. I mean, I know there's a couple guys that are going to need rides in next year, like Matt Benedetto, to name a few, but I'm just glad to see Junior wants to get involved. Maybe he'll even rename it something cool again, like DEI for the fans and everything. But I think this is exciting news for sure.
Oh, he'd have to fight the Wicked Witches of South for that one.
Well, let me just say, I think this is really good news. I have to agree with all of you that having Dale Jr. have a team in the Cup Series would be very huge for the series. Just like DEI was huge for the series, that didn't work out quite the way they originally planned. But to have Junior, make this happen, whether it's next year or the next year or the next year, doesn't really matter. The tease is out there now, and I think that there's probably a strong possibility that this will happen at one point or another. So it's got fans really kind of salivating, if you will, for it to happen when it does happen. So I'm sure that maybe they know something that we don't know, and they can know that they can make things work out for their benefit. We'll have to kind of wait and see. But, Mike, you brought up some good points of some other things that they're going to have to overcome. So we'll have to wait and see how the rest of that story plays out. But, Jay, I'm curious to know your thoughts since you brought this up.
Well, and I got a lot of them here rattling around in my head. First off, I'm with you guys. I do think it's great news. I don't want to jump the gun. You know, he went from saying it absolutely would not to it's a possibility. The opportunity is there, as we saw with Denny Hamlin and some others. With this new next-gen car, that was the goal. However, then you got to look at the charter system and the way ownership works, as Mike said, was the first thing. I know in our group there, I use the word manipulated because it is. I mean, let's call a spade a spade. You know, teams have more than the four teams. It's a matter of how they put it on paper and list different things. You know, Hendrick can actually turn over complete ownership of Hendrick Motorsports to Gordon and then put his name under Junior Motorsports, or however that would work out. So I don't see that as truthfully as a big a hurdle as anything. I think the charter would be the first and primary one. That, too, can be worked out. That one, I won't use the word manipulated. That one can be worked out, because I think if Junior decides to go, he's going to have some backing, whether it be from other sponsors. himself or Rick Hendrick, that I think they will come up with a charter. Again, they may have to pay more than somebody else would, or somebody else may not even want to sell, but money talks. So, and I know that Hendrick mm-hmm. Motorsports has struggled with some sponsorships or whatever, but like I said, I think if that were the case, I think somewhere down there. So for the first year or two, when you talk about the revenue sharing, it's going to be at the bottom end, but that goes back to then of you got to start somewhere and build. But I do think that if they decide to, when and if they do, to make the jump, that I think they will one way or another come up with a leased or whatever charter to start. And I do think NASCAR needs to take a look at this. If their goal was to get more driver or team owners involved, that's one of the selling points of, hey, if you got it locked at 36 and only 40 spots, we're not going to come join to take the chance of being one out of four to get in. So I think that that may need to be reevaluated down the road, as I felt it always has. The last one, the driver, I know, and like I said, I don't even know who it was on Twitter had this up, but I did respond to it. I think ideally, and this would say it's in the next year or maybe even two, that Justin Allgaier should be their first driver. Say, for example, if they run a limited schedule next year of 5, 6, 7 races, I think Justin Allgaier should be their driver. Start with that veteran driver, one they know and trust and does good in good equipment. Down the road, Mike, the future is Noah Gregson. I know you wouldn't say it, probably don't want to see it, don't think it, but I really do believe that Gregson is the future. Does he have some maturing to do and things to handle? Yes, as do some of the other ones out there, as we all do as people. But I do think that Noah Gregson is the future, if not at Junior Motorsports, somewhere.
Okay, so Mike, your follow-up.
Yeah, there's a couple more issues, you know, that kind of come up with this as well. Looking at Junior Motorsports in the Xfinity Series, they are one of the premier teams in the series, if not the premier team. So does Dale Earnhardt Jr. want to go from being a big fish in a small pond to a minnow in the ocean? Maybe he does, maybe he doesn't. I don't know. Regarding the driver piece, hey, Jay, you want to go double or nothing on that case of Mountain Dew? I've got a bet.
I can't
for
even
you.
Get you to pay. I can't even get you to pay me as it is.
Well, that's because I won the last bet. Here's your new bet. My bet is Josh Berry gets a third win in a Junior Motorsports car before Noah Gregson does.
Well, I'll take that bet.
Okay, Johnny.
There we go. That's my take on it.
Like I said, Johnny? I'm just glad that Junior is at least thinking about it and considering it, because I think it will be huge. And I mean, the charter will be the more challenging part, but he will have, I mean, it's Junior. He's going to have sponsorship from all over the place probably. And somebody will definitely back it if he's trying to get back into sport for sure. So that they would make it happen. I was just sitting here thinking, too, would Junior pull up a rookie for the car? But I think they would probably do Allgaier first to give him a shot. And then I even thought Berry, because, I mean, even though he's a rookie this year in the Xfinity Series, he's still 30 years old. And, I mean, this is his, like, 7th race, I think, and he just won. So, I mean, he might deserve a shot in it, too, but Gregson is the one that they're grooming probably, or now Sam Mayer even, but that's even further down the line. So, I don't know. Time will tell who he would put in that car, but I'm sure it would be someone relevant.
Okay. Well, let me start with Gregson. Gregson's future is in his own hands. He does have some maturing to do, whether he wants to admit it or not. He needs to mature, especially if he wants to move on to the Cup Series. And you know, if he keeps resisting that and he keeps thinking he knows better than everybody else, then I don't think that Cup Series ride is going to materialize for him. So that maturity is a make it or break it kind of deal as far as I'm concerned. Now, the real question is how does Dale Jr. feel about it? So we'll see how that plays out. With regard, a thought occurred to me as we're talking here about the charters, and that is, you know, we've been wondering who's going to be the heir apparent at Hendrick Motorsports. We know Jeff Gordon is certainly in line for that. He owns at least one of those cars, if not two of the cars, at Hendrick Motorsports as it is. So what's the possibility of the charter coming through one of those, maybe one or two of those Hendrick Motorsports cars, and they kind of split that up with Jeff Gordon taking two of those cars and Dale Jr. taking the other two cars with the capacity to expand to four, not immediately, but somewhere down the road. So just a thought there if you're looking at the bigger picture of how that could happen. I'm not saying it will. I just think it might be a possibility. And so I think that when they decide that it's going to happen, I think those guys are going to make it happen. And I think that Justin Allgaier is a good choice to be at least one of the drivers. And who knows, you know, you've got some drivers that might be on the hot seat there at Hendrick Motorsports too, that would open the door for other drivers. So just some thoughts rolling around in my head. I have no inside information, but I'm curious to know your thoughts, Jay.
Well, I said I had a lot of thoughts rolling around in my own head, and you and Tommy both just added some more there. Sam Mayer one coming up. We know he's going to split that
yes.
ride there with Josh Berry. So that's another name. And that would go back to what Mike said of whether or not, when we look at it, whether he keeps Junior Motorsports in the Xfinity Series as well as a Cup team. And, again, we're getting, you know, way, way down the road. And all we've done is move away from the hard no, but apparently we need to call Junior and tell him how we got this all worked out. But your scenario of one of Hendricks possibly, I know we talked about that last year of whether or not Hendrick would be able to survive with all four based on sponsorship and other things. That is a possibility for sure to start there of splitting that and then letting each of them grow. Certainly a curious thought to ponder. I'm not sure I would see it. I think they would go another route, like I said, of starting at the bottom with one of the lower tiers, but that is a possibility that one of them, one or two, like that, and they split it, and that grows each of them the opportunity to grow. But again, at some point, you still got to come up with those other charters, and there is only, mm-hmm. as Mike used the term, finite number of them. So that's where I think it's going to go back to NASCAR. They want more owners involved, but you got to have that opportunity for them and not just four spots. As a race fan, I've always been in favor of, you show up week to week. If you're one of the fastest cars and can get in, you race. If not, you go home and try again the mm-hmm. next week. I personally, again, I think that adds something to it. If I go to a race and my favorite driver doesn't make it that week, yeah, I'm disappointed. But I know then there's 24, which is normal for a dirt track event, fast cars that are going to put on a show. So, you know, it just wasn't their week, unfortunately. But I think that adds, especially if you're talking points-wise for the national championship, you know, you got a good driver, missed a race, they got to make it up. How much harder they're going to drive, how much more you're going to be behind them to see if they can make that up. So I think it adds from that perspective, for me as a fan anyway.
Well, okay, some really good points there, but we'll let that be the final word. So, Mike, you get to bring up the next hot topic.
All right, this is a little bit of a follow-up from a topic that we talked about extensively last season. This past weekend at Martinsville, Travis Mack, the crew chief for the number 99 Trackhouse car at Daniel Suarez, was ejected from the racetrack for unspecified ballast issues with the car, something about ballast in the jack post. We talk extensively about how NASCAR should send a message regarding teams and playing around with ballast and being outside the rules on that. So I'm wondering what everyone's thoughts on the Travis Mack situation is, and does this sound a lot like a lesson hasn't been learned so far?
Okay, Tommy, you get to start us off on this one.
So I don't really know much about the mechanics of the car that much, but I do remember last year that one of those fell off and someone ran over it on the track, which was a big deal because I believe that they're heavy and that they can cause some damage. But other than that, I don't really know much about it. But I do see here that you also said, does it derail Trackhouse's momentum? So if I remember how the race was going yesterday, Truex was a lap or two down, but he was working his way up into the top 20, top 15 when he wrecked out. So, I mean, I think he was moving his way into the top 10, so that was really good. So, I mean, they still seem to be on the right track, even with Travis Mack not being there yesterday. But
you said Truex, but I think you meant Suarez, right?
Suarez. Yes, I'm sorry, I meant Suarez. Okay. I didn't mean Truex. I thought I said Travis Mack was the crew chief. But he, even with him not there yesterday, they were still doing good. But as for the ballast, though, I'm sure he will get fined or docked for that for sure, since that's a big deal, since that could have fallen off and been even worse if someone would have ran over and damaged the car.
Okay, good point. So, Jay, your thoughts? Do we have
okay,
news
sorry.
On
I was
Jay?
Actually. Yep. No, I was scrolling through Twitter there. I'm not sure if the penalty was for putting it in a different place or improperly secured. Improperly secured is a huge issue, as Tommy talked about. I mean, these are bricks, basically. And if they're not secured properly, coming off is a huge safety thing and cannot be tolerated. And that goes across any racing form. If it is a matter of putting weight in a different spot in the car, now you're just talking about an illegal move or an illegal adjustment to a car, which in the terms of cheating and going around the rules, obviously is important, but for me anyway, at least not as big as the safety issue of it coming off the car. And Tommy said he's not real familiar with it. Again, the weight in the car is a huge thing. Quick thing with a dirt track, a friend of mine that let me ride with him, a two-seater factory stock. He always had female drivers, so I didn't know if I was going to be allowed to, but when I asked him, and again, my mind was just, he always has females. He said I could, but he wanted to know what I weighed, and immediately that's why it hit me, because if I'm in the car, he can move weight to the other, to a different, or has to, realistically, because you're talking to 100 pounds or say between me and most of his riders. So that's a huge factor, especially from my understanding of where they had moved it. Again, if you have weight on the left side of the car wants to lean to the left. You're going around in a circle to the left. It's automatically doing what you want it to do. So that's a very big thing when it comes to that, of the handling of the car. And there's reasons, again, for rules on it. So I'm not going to say I don't want to play it like it's not important if they're just bending the rules versus the safety, but I do think the securing of it is a very big issue. And I know Mike and I talked about this real quick. From my understanding, the penalty has already been the 10 points and the one race ejection for the crew chief. If there's more coming, I don't see it because, like I said, that's one they normally, from what we've seen last year with Ryan Blaney's team, that was it. That was the penalty.
Okay, yeah, you're right. Now, it was originally posted that Travis Mack was ejected from the infield of Martinsville for improperly attached ballast on the jack post. But then the update says that the 99 car was found to have added ballast outside of the approved container. So the team was penalized with the loss of the 10 NASCAR Championship driver owner points. They had to start at the rear of the field for the race, and their crew chief was ejected from the event. Personally, I, you know, I don't know that there's a huge difference between it being added outside of the approved container or being improperly attached. It seems to me that it was still a safety issue. And for that reason, I think 10 points is 10 points. But I think that there has to be more of a penalty, in my mind, for the crew chief. This guy was also, if you remember, he also served a penalty for two loose lug nuts at Phoenix and had to sit out a race because of that. Now he's got the ballast issue outside of the approved container. 10 points and just being ejected from one event, I think we all agreed last year when we talked about this that just isn't a penalty to remove the crew chief because they've got all kinds of ways that they can still communicate with the team, even if they're not at the track. So I know Jose Blasco Figueroa stepped in as the crew chief, but I think there has to be something more, more points, something that really says we're just not going to tolerate this for another a second time. So, Mike, I'm curious to know your thoughts.
Yeah, kind of to echo your opinion, and we talked about this a lot last year, I think we're at the point now where NASCAR needs to do a suspension until we feel like getting back to you, and you might want to go cut the grass or pour yourself a drink because it's going to be a minute kind of suspension. Clearly, teams are not getting the picture regarding ballast. It's one thing to mess with the ride heights or have the camber off a little bit or something, but the last thing I and hopefully most people want to see is one of these ballast weights going through a car's windshield or up into the grandstands because those things could hurt or kill somebody without too much trouble. So I get Jay's point about, yeah, there's a difference between improperly mounting ballast because you failed to do so or trying to play with the rules. But when you're talking about something with that kind of density and weight and as a potential projectile, that's something that there should be a little bit of discretion, but not that much discretion. Just like if a wheel falls off of a car, for example, that's an automatic 4-race suspension right there. Regardless of the circumstances, if a wheel comes off of the car, it's a 4-race suspension. Why? Because a wheel is a very dangerous thing to have loose and uncontrolled out on a racetrack. And it's the same thing with these ballast weights. A ballast weight probably weighs close to the same amount as a whole wheel and tire assembly, but it's the size of a brick instead of the size of a big wheel and tire. So that kind of weight and mass hitting somebody can have catastrophic consequences, and it needs to be made abundantly clear that that is not something to play games with under any circumstance for any reason.
Okay, I'm going to go ahead and make my announcement here. For any of the new people that are here, just to let you know, we do go off the air at exactly 10:30 p.m. Eastern Time. However, we do continue recording the rest of our conversation, and that part of our conversation is available on our podcast as part of our bonus overtime material. So if you hear us go off the air in mid-sentence, just know that the rest of that conversation is available on the podcast. I'll go out on Twitter as soon as we're finished and let people know that the podcast is now available. If you've listened up to this point, all you have to do is fast forward to that two-hour mark, and you can then hear the rest of the conversation. So just a quick update for everybody. Especially if you're new and aren't aware of the fact that we do will go off the air at exactly 10:30 p.m. Eastern Time, that we are continuing to record. So, again, Mike, I think you had something more you wanted to say there.
No, that was my piece. Like I said, throw the book at them. Make sure they hit them with all the pages in that book.
Okay. Tommy, your thoughts?
I was going to say thanks, Shay, for explaining it to me. It makes sense now in regards to the weight because I remember watching on Junior's Download how they've been talking about, like, adding air conditioning for the suits and how most drivers and crew chiefs don't want that because it's just extra stuff to put into the car and they don't really want it. So I know that's it's still kind of completely different than the bows, but I mean, I get what you're saying about all the extra weight and stuff in the vehicle. But I didn't realize either that they had already announced the penalty and stuff. I don't really remember last season what the penalty was for the guys that had the ballast issues, but I just remember being a problem last year, and it sounds like you guys are right about them since it was a problem last year and now it's a problem this year. It seems like they're just experimenting with it, and maybe it is time for them to crack down on it since it's become – maybe it'll be a serious issue, and I don't want to see one of these parts go flying off and into a car and – causing extensive damage and maybe even hurting one of the drivers or a spectator for sure. That's not good. But
yeah, hopefully,
like I said, I'm not really a mechanic, so I don't really know.
I'm sorry, Tommy, go ahead.
But other than that, I don't see Trackhouse struggling, though, because he was working his way back up into the top 12, and I'm more worried about them securing a charter because that video I saw 2 or 3 weeks ago on Twitter of the owner talking about it sounded like he was having a very difficult time of getting a charter. So I hate to see that because I feel like Suarez is finally doing very well and running well again. So I hope it works out for him at Trackhouse.
Okay, Jay, your follow-up.
Well, as we discussed last year and happened to do again this year, I think we're all kind of in agreement, and Andy as well not being here tonight, of the crew chief one race suspension really is nothing. It's gotten to the point where that's just a joke, as we saw. The long-term effect, because I'm the one that mentioned the momentum of the team, yeah, they still did. We're recovering and running good this weekend. But again, as Sharon pointed out, if we're beginning to see a trend of this particular team or crew chief or whatever, I was waiting for you to reference Chad Knaus. You know, when it's happened multiple times in a year, maybe they need to take a look at it a little harder. Going back to the ballast, and that's where, like I said, my belief, and Sharon read the update as to what the penalty was and what it was for, having an unsecure, improperly secured is a very serious one. And had they found it improperly secured, I don't know if it would have been as strong, but I believe, and I'll have to research some of this, last year or the year before in the Xfinity Series, when one did come off the car, I think it was a 50-point loss. So that's what makes me think it was secure. It was just in an appropriate place. Now it's a rules infraction, not a safety. Do I think that the 10 points is a little light? Yes, but I am much more, you know, agree with the 50 points for safety. If it's the safety thing and improperly installed and going to come loose, I like what Mike said. I've never heard it said that way. You throw the book at him and make sure every page hits him. I like that.
Yeah, I have to agree, as I said before. I just think that we're not going to wait until a ballast does go through a windshield before we decide that it needs to be a stiffer penalty. I hope we can be more proactive on this and take care of it before it gets to that point. But you're right. If there are some trends going on here and it's the same people all the time, there's one thing about pushing the envelope, but I've said it over and over again. These guys are very intelligent people. If they can be that little bit over, they can certainly be that little bit within. And I just think that these guys are too smart to be making these kind of mistakes. And they need to be called to task for it when they're making them. So, Mike, I'll let you have the last word on it.
Normally, I'm not a big fan of the, you know, the next guy to do this is going to get it kind of threats and penalties and whatnot. Most of the time I feel like that's unfair to somebody who might be in an unfortunate circumstance or, you know, just the next guy to have some bad luck. But for something like this, especially in racing, like Jay said, teams are always looking for the littlest advantage. So if you're catching one guy doing something, there's a good chance there's a few other guys in the garage doing the same thing you just haven't caught. So as much as I hate to use the phrase make an example out of somebody, at some point an example is going to have to get made to show that this is not a tolerable place for people to play games and accept their little one race $10,000 slap on the wrist, because at the Cup Series level, especially like you said, Sharon, with the communication resources that are available, that's a nothing penalty. That's a strategic decision at their point. If they gain 11 positions because of shenanigans, that 10-point penalty was worth it. That was a worthwhile investment. You've got to put some teeth behind it that is something that the team must consider, and it must be something the team can't strategically plan around and figure out how to have a net gain over that penalty.
Okay, so we'll make that the final word on that topic. And, Tommy, you get to bring
up our
next topic. Yeah.
Sharon, can I suggest you have the final word on this topic? I always try to get it right, but you said first time is a mistake, second time.
first time is an accident. First time is an accident. The second time it's a coincidence, but by the time it happens the third time, it's become a habit, and it's usually a bad habit by that point. So this guy's had two calls on him already. So he's at the coincidence stage. He does not want to let this go to the habit stage, because this is a very bad habit to establish. Okay, so Tommy, you get to start us off with the next hot topic.
Let's go with, now that the different winter streaks is over, do we still see 16 different winners in a regular season to make the playoffs?
Okay, Jay, you get to lead us off here.
Well, this is another one Mike must not have been doing something, because me and him were chatting back and forth. I think 12 to 13 is almost a given at this point. We got Brad Keselowski, Chase Elliott, Kyle Busch, Denny Hamlin, and Kevin Harvick, who haven't won yet. With the 7 we already have, that's 12. So 12 to 13 will give one extra just for a surprise winner, which we've already had, but there could be multiple surprise winners. Those couple that are on the verge, we've seen it. We've been talking about the Trackhouse Racing, Daniel Suarez. I put Bubba Wallace on the list. And then you got, Mike mentioned Ricky Stenhouse, Austin Dillon, Cole Custer, who's won, Kurt Busch, that maybe don't win every year, but have at least or come closer, have one win throughout a year. Right, there's four more, so you add that to the 12 or 13, you're talking about 16, 17. So obviously as we get more repeat winners, which I do think we're going to see throughout the rest of the year, is Joey Logano, Denny Hamlin's going to get multiple, he just hasn't gotten the first one yet. That chance is decreasing, but it's not out of the realm of possibilities yet. Again, like I said, start with the top five, we're looking at 12 for sure in my opinion.
Okay, Mike, your thoughts?
I was worried Jay was going to burn my whole list because I listed off a large number of drivers there, but he didn't get to some of them. We did have Austin Dillon, Alex Bowman, Cole Custer, and Kurt Busch all won at least one race last season. They have yet to win this year. I wouldn't say they're a sure thing. In fact, you know, that those four names that Jay listed off, you know, Elliott, Harvick, Kyle Busch, Denny Hamlin, as sure bets for wins, well, maybe not. Kyle Busch didn't win a race in the regular season last year, and Denny Hamlin didn't win a race all through the 2017 season. So what we see as a sure thing may not be a sure thing, but I'm in strong agreement with Jay, or else I wouldn't have put out the list that he rattled off there. I'm pretty sure all those drivers are going to get at least one win here in the regular season. And, you know, Matt DiBenedetto is another name to throw in there, Bubba Wallace and Daniel Suarez. I don't think any of those three drivers would surprise me by winning as much as Michael McDowell did. So you've got probably somewhere between 20 and 25 potential race winners by the time the regular season ends, between the guys who have already won, the who we consider to be a sure thing, or guys who won in the previous season, or the guys who a lot of people feel are right there knocking on the door.
Yeah, as you're talking, Mike, I'm envisioning the possibility of the regular season champion having the most points being going into the playoffs without a win, and perhaps being you know, in that 14th or 15th or 16th spot because of the people ahead of him with wins. Wouldn't that be an interesting scenario to see? But I think, you know, of course it's possible. We'll have to wait and see how it plays out. But, I do think that there's a possibility that the five drivers that Jane mentioned, they certainly have the capability of coming up with a win. But Mike brings up a good point. Not all of them are necessarily going to get a win. And yet there's other drivers that we don't normally think of getting a win, like a Cole Custer or a Daniel Suarez, who could come up with a win. And all of a sudden now they're up in there in the top 16 because of that victory. So it's going to be Tyler Reddick. You got to put him in that category too. I think it's going to be an interesting season to watch to see how this does play off. We were talking earlier about Kevin Harvick. It's amazing he has no playoff points at this stage of the game. He has no win yet this season. So he's just, you know, wouldn't it be amazing if he ends up without a win before this is all said and done? It's hard to believe that we're saying that, but it's possible. But I do think we're going to have quite a few winners in this year's group of people. And I think that scenario that I brought this up with of having a regular season champion that is going to go into the playoffs back in 13th, 14th, 15th, or 16th spot as a result of all of the drivers that do have wins when the playoffs begin. The cream usually rises to the top when the playoffs begin, so I wouldn't expect that to last very long, but it is a possibility that it could happen. So, Tommy, we're back to you. So what are your thoughts?
I'm just thinking with the schedule and the way things are shaking out. I mean, Talladega is 2 weeks away, two weekends away.
Mm-hmm.
So much potential. I mean, Newman could win, Almirola, DiBenedetto, Wallace. I mean, even Spire Motorsports has a win with Haley at Daytona. I know it's a rain delay, but I mean, they've been putting cars in the top 10 when they enter in Daytona and Super Speedway. So, I mean, you could even say Corey LaJoie or probably Haley in that 77 car could get a surprise victory. Alfredo's at Front Row Motorsports, McDowell's teammate. They just won 500. So, I mean, their Super Speedway program is good, so he might can even be a threat. I mean, there's, and then I even had this one in my head. If Calling Racing puts in a car at COTA, I'm sure that they'll put Almendinger in that car. I mean, there's, he, I mean, never say never. I know that he did the road course and he was running in like the top 20 in that area most of the race, but I mean, he's still a road course ace, and if they put him in that car at COTA, he's a threat, in my opinion. But it's super exciting. I think that since they're calling it the best season ever, it would be rather ironic if there's 16 winners and the regular season champion is the 17 looking in and he gets in and hurts someone's feelings. That would probably be the way it goes.
Okay, Jay.
Well, this is when you're talking about, especially when you're talking about points, and this is where I said when I was in a little bit earlier and I heard Sal talking about it, talking about Martin Truex having the most points with 11, and we've seen that in the first years when they went to the playoff points. Truex, the first one to truly capitalize on it. We've seen Truex and Harvick do that in the past as the most predominant, but Harvick having none this year, I don't think you can put Truex in that, because it's also about stage wins and running good throughout races. Truex has 10 of those 11 because he is the first two-time winner, and you get 5 for winning the race. In years past, mm-hmm. even if he'd only have 2 or 3 wins, just as many of his points was coming from these stage wins, which we're seeing different drivers do this year, and that's why you have that narrow gap. The wins are going to be that much more predominant because it is the 5 points. But I think we're seeing other drivers that are getting these mid-race stage points to equal out to that. And it is going to become very huge, as you said. And we saw it last year with Harvick, and it didn't unfortunately carry him all the way to the championship, which I do like that it didn't, not necessarily for Harvick. But having that big points him and Denny Hamlin had built up with their 8 and 9 victories didn't carry Harvick into the championship four. So I like that we're trending that way, that we're seeing more division, and it's going to be about racing your way in and 1 or 2 points. And we've seen this multiple times throughout. 1 or 2 points is going to be a huge difference.
Okay, Mike, your thoughts?
I don't know a lot of things. I mean, there's a lot of things I don't know. But what I'm pretty confident at this point is if I'm Michael McDowell, I need to start getting really nervous in this situation, because if we do have 17 winners, it goes by points. So if Michael McDowell with a Daytona 500 win has one win, that tiebreaker for who gets those 16 playoff positions is based on their finishing position in the regular season points. So if Michael McDowell is the lowest points position driver with a win, then he will be on the outside looking in. So maybe he is racing Massa Benedetto, Bubba Wallace, Daniel Suarez, those drivers who might sneak in there and grab a win but still be right on that lower end of the points scale. It becomes that much more important for a driver like Michael McDowell to not just assume that they're in the playoffs based on that Daytona 500 win, based on the trends that we've seen so far this year.
Yeah, then he might need 2 wins, right? We'll have to kind
That's
of see
how
it plays out.
That's probably the best way to do it.
Yeah, because if a lot of drivers have just that one win and it goes below the 16 people mark, it doesn't guarantee that they're going to be in the playoffs. So, yeah, the best way to secure your spot is to get that second win. And you're right, the competition's going to be a lot more competitive as a result of that, because I do think that we're going to see some surprise winners before this is all said and done, who may not be in that top 16 right now, but that win is going to propel them right up in there as long as they can kind of keep their points up there as well. So Tommy said it. It's going to be interesting to see how it does play out. I wish I had a crystal ball, but I don't, because I can make a lot of money if I did. But I think it's going to be interesting to watch and a fun year to keep your eye on. Tommy, go ahead.
I was just going to add, too, you can't leave Stenhouse out at Talladega. And he's been running good this year. And then Ryan Preece has been running well also. So, I mean, it's just wide open at this point. And then there's still a few people that, like we've been talking about, that haven't won yet that will win, like Hamlin and Keselowski and Harvick and Chase Elliott. And then you got the people that could win, like Alex Bowman. Also, you can't count out Chris Buescher. He was looking good at Homestead, won a stage. I mean, it's just wide open this year. It really is exciting to see everybody competing the way they are, and I do think that we might see 16 different winners for sure, possibly, but anywhere in between the range of 12 to 16, I think, is where we're definitely headed for sure.
Okay, so we'll let that be the final word. And Jay, we've got a few more minutes here. Do you have a quick topic for us?
Well, I'm not sure if it's quick, but and it was one I did want to hit on, and something Mike said a little earlier, of making an example out of somebody. In the Xfinity Series this weekend, NASCAR did penalize in race, and I can't think of who it was, a driver for intentionally bringing out the yellow. And I'll leave my comments to it to the end there, but they did penalize a driver for in race for bringing out a yellow intentionally.
Sharon still there? Maybe not.
Yeah,
sorry, I had the mute button on. Sorry. Go ahead, Mike.
Yeah, no worries. Yeah, I saw that. Interesting to see. I want to say it was Joe Graff Jr., but I'm not super confident in an answer, so don't quote me. And Joe Graff, if you're listening and I'm wrong, I'm sorry.
I don't think it was Joe Graff, no.
Either way. Okay, so like you said, the name isn't super important. The important point of discussion here is that NASCAR did make the call and penalized, I think it was a one-lap hold, and then they, you know, obviously the driver had to get back out onto the track and up to speed, so I think the net loss was close to two laps by the time they were back out at speed. And it was their judgment call that the driver intentionally spun to bring out the caution. I'm not sure if they got any sort of objective criteria that they use to determine that, whether they're looking at loop data or the throttle and brake traces or whatnot, which, by the way, was really interesting to see that brought up on the screen there at a couple points during the races where they overlaid the throttle, brake, and steering inputs. That was really cool to see. So I'm not sure if NASCAR is using that data in order to try and objectively determine, or if it is just a judgment call based on the officiating. They've got Pandora's box open at this point, so hopefully they've got some sort of a standard and an objective criteria that they can use. So if somebody wants to complain about it, they can point to, hey, you checked this box, and this box. It's pretty obvious that you did what we say you did. Because when we're talking about big money racing like we are, that's a big money call that they're making on these guys. So hopefully they've got something to stand on with it.
Okay, Tommy, your thoughts?
What comes to my mind is just over the years, like I remember Robbie Gordon at Atlanta one year brought out the caution by throwing something out of his car. And I feel like the reason why that was a big deal, he did it with like a few laps to go in the race, and it kind of changed the outcome of the race for one driver. While I hate it for that driver, that is one factor that I feel like some of these drivers caused intentional crashes, or not intentional crashes, but intentionally spinning. They have done it late in the race before, and it has brought out a caution and then a restart, and it's kind of shaked up how things have ended. So there is that part of it, but I like the fact that if that guy did intentionally spin out this past weekend, they went ahead and penalized him on the track instead of just fining him after a race, because I feel like that's what they did to Bubba a couple years ago. And then already this year, Bush spun out at Vegas, and, you know, there was kind of speculation that that might have been intentional, but then they determined that it wasn't, I believe. So I just think that sometimes it affects the outcome of the race, and sometimes I don't want them to intentionally do it to change the race, but sometimes it does make it more interesting at the end when it happens.
Yeah, I remember that race with Robbie Gordon, and it definitely did change the outcome of that race. And a lot of people were up in arms about it. So this is something that's been going on for quite a while. I remember people talking afterwards saying that some of these guys regularly carry extra little bits and pieces in their car that they can throw out when the time is right. And it was a kind of a common practice. So I think NASCAR tried to crack down on it then. Obviously, it's kind of raised itself to a different level now with the intentional spins. I had not heard that they said that Kyle Busch's spin was not intentional. Because to me, it sure looked like it was intentional. I do think that if they determined how it wasn't intentional, I'd really be curious to know what they based that on. I do think that they need to make the call. I applaud them for making the call, but Mike brings up a good point. I hope they have a checklist that if there's a complaint, all of those check boxes are hit, and there's no arguing about it. So, Jay, I'm curious to hear your thoughts.
Well, and I'll try to be quick. Like, I know we got coming up on it. My problem here, and I'm normally not the negative person, I won't say who is, but I think that here in this case, NASCAR wanted to make an example and say they were, or show that they were doing it. I don't feel that whoever it was in the Xfinity series necessarily truly did. I think it was an I think NASCAR saw it as an opportunity to put it as that and say, hey, we are watching it kind of as a threat to other drivers. Had this topic not come up here as of recent in the past month, I don't feel like that caution would have been labeled as such and the driver penalized. And the reason I'm going with this is I want to say it was one of the lower tiers back marker cars that it happened to. And when I go back to Kyle Busch's, and I don't remember which race it was a few weeks back, when majority of us felt that that one was intentional and Kyle said he wouldn't talk about it, there was a problem with the car. We just felt he should have been able to handle it, not spin out. Sunday in the Cup race, Kyle said, oh, something's broke, spun out, and yet continued, and then talked about it on the broadcast on TV. They didn't see a tire down. He didn't have any other kind of issue. They didn't fix anything on the car. I personally believe Kyle did it again, but over the radio to his spotter and crew, he said, oh, I got a problem, and that's when it happened. But I think that was very specifically done because NASCAR has been keeping an eye on it. And I, like I said, it's not very often, but I truly believe that the one in the Xfinity Series that was penalized was made as an example, and I don't know that he necessarily even did it intentionally, but it wasn't as big a factor for him. He was already in the back, and I think that's why NASCAR kind of chose to do it that way, just to show that they are doing something.
Okay, I thought an interesting thought. Mike, your follow-up.
Jay, how can you pick on Andy like that when he's not even on the call to defend himself? Come on.
I told you it was nice to have you back, didn't I?
I told you we're the cut rate undisputed. So there you go. Anyway, with regard to the points that Jay brought up, you're right. I think that it was kind of a shot across the bow from NASCAR to not just the Xfinity Series field, but all their major touring series in general of, hey, we're looking at this. Maybe at least be a little bit more discreet about it. And I don't know. Maybe Kyle Busch had that in his mind when he threw out the, hey, something's broke call about half a lap before he spun the car out. I don't know. It didn't get a lot of TV coverage. Kyle Busch wasn't having the best race for the most part. So it's not like he was driving around with a flat tire and then spun out. But maybe he did feel like there was some adjustment that needed to be made to the car and it was better to do it under caution. I don't know. I can speculate on the circumstances as much as the next guy. But maybe this will kind of reduce the number of the intentional, just egregious spin-outs like Kyle Busch did at Las Vegas. And we all pretty much are convinced that he did it. And Kyle's smart enough not to admit it, especially after seeing what they did to Bubba Wallace last year. But even Kyle Busch was wink, wink, nudge, nudge, kind of admitting to what he was doing there. Hopefully that puts an end to some of it. But kind of like Tommy said, sometimes a caution here and there is not necessarily the worst of things, especially when you're, you know, lap 300 of green flag racing out of a 500-mile Atlanta race. It gets a little tedious, and maybe a yellow here and there is not the worst thing to happen.
Okay, Tommy, your follow-up.
I just like that they're going ahead and penalizing them during the race versus just finding them afterwards. And, sometimes it's interesting at the end if they do intentionally spin and cause a late caution, because that restart could be crucial to the ending.
Yeah, that's true, but that's kind of the whole point of it, is it's influencing the outcome of the race, and you're not supposed to be doing that artificially. So, you know, NASCAR's got to decide how they're going to handle it. And, yeah, you're right. It's kind of nice to have that caution sometimes to kind of lighten things up a little bit and make it a little more exciting. But at some point, you know, you got to make the call, too, about if you want the end of the race to be influenced that way or not. So, Jay, we'll let you have the final word here.
I know Sharon likes it when I do this. I don't want it to become WWE, whether it's by drivers or NASCAR being manufactured. And I was not on the bandwagon back in the day of what they called the phantom caution. So I don't want to see that. I don't want to see it that NASCAR does it or drivers either way. If Martin Truex has the car and leads 400 or 500 laps out of a 600-mile race, then guess what? For that week, you got to give him props. Was it the most entertaining then? Maybe not, but give him props. They were ready, prepared, and did what they came to do. I don't want to see NASCAR either, though, and in this case, I feel kind of bad. I think there has been more obvious situations where it was intentional, even though it wasn't admitted, that they didn't penalize. This one, like I said, I don't feel like, and I'll put this out there, what Mike said. You can speculate. It is my personal opinion. But on the other side of it, I don't think there is any way, no matter what kind of graphics or electronics they have, you know, if you came off the gas, well, my foot hurt, you know, I mean, I was stretching my toes or whatever. So going by the telemetry and stuff from the in-car isn't a guarantee either. If they put it down as, hey, this is what we're going to check and watch, and drivers know it, okay, so be it, but I don't think that is a guarantee either. There is no real guarantee. It is going to be a judgment call, and that's where I don't want to see it become. Because, again, it's a tough place to be, and you're never going to be 100% right. You have a white line, yellow line, don't go below the yellow line. That's obvious. You got a pit box, you're pitting outside the box. That's obvious. This isn't something that is, and I want drivers not to do it so that NASCAR doesn't have to worry about it and we don't have to talk about it. That's what I'd like.
Very good point. Okay, so it's that time of the night where we need to wrap it up, so we'll start our roundtable. Tommy, we'll start with you.
Okay, so I have the Twitter now. I still can't change my Twitter handle yet since I just created this fan account, but NASCAR fan since 95 or at since 95 fan is the Twitter handle now. I just created the account, so please follow me. I've only got 3 followers right now, looking for more. And as soon as I get a little bit more followers, I'll start tweeting out some content. And also should have an article coming out about North Wilkesboro soon.
Okay. Mike.
It's going to be Mike_Orzel on Twitter, Mike_O on Reddit. Come on and downvote all of my unpopular but completely correct opinions that I post on a regular basis on there. Remember, it doesn't mean that I'm wrong. It just means that you're mad. I've got an article going through hopefully the final stages of editing here, the next in the series of the hot seat articles, looking at another driver who might have a different opportunity to excel beginning next season or in the near future. So keep an eye on that, hopefully by the end of this week.
Okay. Jay.
All right, Mike, you weren't on last week. Tommy mentioned his 3 followers. I think that was me, Sharon, and Andy. So go ahead and get him 4 by clicking on his there as we help him build his following over there. You follow me at Facebook, Michael Hoosman, MoparMJ8 on Twitter and Instagram. And had a muddy weekend. Hopefully get to be back at your Capital City Raceway, Jackson Motor Speedway, with some sprint car action this next weekend, as well as the article on Michael McDowell. We talked about him a little bit already in the program. I'm going to have to incorporate that into the article on where they may end up in points with a win or not. So look forward to that.
Okay, I'm going to make this short and sweet. I'm Fans Racing Site on Twitter, Fans Racing Blog and Radio, everywhere else, including our website, fansracing.com. Now, I want to do a shout-out to our listeners for tuning in. We appreciate you. And to the Fan for Racing crew and all that they do. And with that, I think we'll be ready to call it a night. And, yes, I will have those articles out this week for sure. So with that, let's call it a night, guys.
Good night, everybody.
All right,
a lot
talk
of fun.
To you Thursday.
Good night.
Okay. Good night. We'll see you next. We'll be here on Thursday at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.